Our message today is titled Samson, the Unlikable, and we will read our passage from Judges chapter 14, and I'm just going to read verses 1 through 4. Now Samson went down to Timnah and saw a woman in Timnah, the daughter of the Philistines. So he went up and told his father and mother, saying, I have seen a woman in Timnah, the daughter of the Philistines. Now, therefore, get her for me as a wife. Then his father and mother said to him, Is there no woman among the daughters of your brethren, or among all my people, that you must go get a wife from the uncircumcised Philistines? And Samson said to his father, Get her for me, for she pleases me well. But his father and mother did not know that it was of the Lord, that he was seeking an occasion to move against the Philistines. For at that time, the Philistines had dominion over Israel. Let's stand and we'll pray.
Morning, everybody. You guys can have your Bibles open to Judges chapter 14. We've got a couple chapters to cover today. I'll give you a bit of an intro, and then we'll just work our way through two chapters this morning. Now, it's titled Samson the Unlikable. I don't want to be too hard on this guy. I don't know him personally, but what I do know of him, I have my questions, okay? And I'm not sure he and I would be friends. Here's the deal with Samson, okay? We're going to continue the story today. Last time around, we covered chapter 13, where Samson gets this special calling from God. He's going to be somebody special. His parents are told to set him apart for special use for God's use. Okay, he makes this Nazarite vow. It means he can never get a haircut. Okay, I'm working on that one myself right now. He can't drink alcohol. In fact, he's not even supposed to eat grapes. So no raisins for this guy. He's set apart for God's special use. When we start reading this morning, we're going to have this expectation like maybe this guy would be living a godly life. His parents knew some very, very specific things from God. And so we might expect that they would have led him into these things, but we find out right from the beginning that this guy's not following God at all. He's just kind of sinful and selfish. Here's the problem that we as Christians have with Samson, okay? He's given this special calling from God. He doesn't live it out, and yet God still uses him. God still puts his spirit on Samson. And so it gets a little bit confusing. Is God endorsing Samson's sin, and is God endorsing Samson's selfishness? Beyond that, just like you saw in the video, Samson's about as close to a superhero as we get in the Bible. Okay, I don't think he looked too much like that. But it kind of gives the impression like he's this hero. Yeah, he has this great strength. He has these special powers. He has these heroic exploits, and we'll talk about a few of them today. But really, Samson's more of an anti-hero than he is a hero. Okay, the anti-hero, common theme that's given to us in a lot of literature, modern storytelling, TV, movies. We love anti-heroes, don't we? Heroes that have character flaws that make them more relatable for us. Maybe we can draw some of that out from Samson. But an anti-hero is someone who lacks conventional heroic qualities, someone who displays morally ambiguous traits. They have questionable motives. They're completely self-involved. Big problem with calling Samson a hero is none of these things he does is heroic until his last breath. That's the only heroic thing he really ends up doing. And we'll cover that next week, so we're not going to get there today. But superhero, anti-hero, or hero at all. What he is he's a worldly guy who's very interested in himself. He wants to do what he wants to do. Okay, he's a guy who walks according to his flesh. He's completely self-centered. Again, some of the difficulty we have in understanding Samson and what to make of his story. God uses him. Does that mean that God endorses him? And God puts his spirit on him. Does that mean that God endorses what Samson chooses to do? And the answer to that has to be no. Okay, Galatians chapter 5 says, the flesh and the spirit are at war against each other. That's God's spirit is at war against the flesh of us human beings. Our own natural inclination towards selfishness is at war. Okay. Romans chapter 8, verse 8 says, those who are in the flesh cannot please God. Was God, Samson making God happy by doing some of these things we're about to read about? And the answer is no. Fleshly, sinful. Lastly, James chapter 1. Why don't you flip there real quick? I'll even do it. Erase you. James chapter 1. We need to know, does God entice him into sinning? Does God tempt Samson into doing these things? This will all make sense in a minute, trust me. But James chapter 1, we'll read verses 13 and 14. It says, "Let no one say when he is tempted, 'I am being tempted by God.' For God cannot be tempted with evil, and he himself tempts no one. But each person is tempted when he is lured and enticed by his own desire." Okay, so these questionable things that we're about to read about from Samson, does that mean that God led him into these things? That God enticed him into these actions? And the answer is no. This is all Samson. This is his own choice. This is his own desire. This is him just being a dude. Okay. Samson is a sinful guy who does what he wants, but we're going to find out God is also a guy who does what he wants. Okay, and we'll try and balance those two things today. This is kind of a transitional couple of chapters, so we'll read and talk, and then next week Jason will clarify everything for you. Okay, whatever we need to know and we don't know yet. So let's read Judges chapter 14. I suppose it helps if you flip back there. Okay, verse 1 says, "Samson went down to Timnah, and at Timnah he saw one of the daughters of the Philistines. Then he came up and told his father and mother, 'I saw one of the daughters of the Philistines at Timnah. Now get her for me as my wife.' But his father and mother said to him, 'Is there not a woman among the daughters of your relatives or among all of our people that you must go and take a wife from the uncircumcised Philistines?' But Samson said to his father, 'Get her for me. She is right in my eyes.' His father and mother did not know that it was from the Lord, for he was seeking an opportunity against the Philistines. And at that time, the Philistines ruled over Israel. Then Samson went down with his father and mother to Timnah, and they came to the vineyards of Timnah. And behold, a young lion came toward him, roaring. Then the Spirit of the Lord rushed upon him, and although he had nothing in his hand, he tore the lion in pieces as one tears a young goat. But he did not tell his father or his mother what he had done. Then he went down and talked with the woman, and she was right in Samson's eyes. After some days, he returned to take her, and he turned aside to see the carcass of the lion, and behold, there was a swarm of bees in the body of the lion and honey. He scraped it out into his hands and went on, eating as he went. He came to his father and his mother, and he gave them some, and they ate, but he did not tell them that he had scraped the honey from the carcass of the lion." Let's stop there for a moment. Again, Samson's life starts out with promise, with this idea that he's going to be someone special. The angel of the Lord is there at his birth. Okay, if you were here last time when Pastor Jason was covering chapter 13, we're talking about who the angel of the Lord is. Very likely that's Jesus Christ incarnate. Jesus made Old Testament appearances. Whenever the angel of the Lord shows up, that's Jesus in the Old Testament. And he tells Samson's parents that Samson is going to save Israel. So there's a great calling on his life, a special calling. Here we see him as an adult, and he doesn't seem to care at all what God thinks. He doesn't seem to be living out any measure of faith. He's not doing anything except just bouncing around looking to gather up some general experiences. This place, Timnah, is probably within 5 or 10 miles of where he grew up. Okay, Timnah is actually in Israel, which is important to the story. We'll get there in a minute. But he's just a single guy, bachelor life, bouncing around. He probably owned a van. He probably did some rock climbing. Okay, he probably was the original van lifer. But he's just gathering experience. He's not living for God. He sees a girl in Timnah, and he tells his parents to go get her for him. Now, there's all sorts of problems with this statement. Okay. Don't ask your parents to get you a girl. That was just obvious. That one's very clear. He sees her and he says, "She's right in my eyes. I want her." Okay, he wants this gal based on her outward appearance. Apparently, she was attractive to him. And guys are very, very visual creatures. Okay, this is very common for guys to judge a gal based on what she looks like, to let that seep deep into your heart and other parts of your body, and to make decisions based on that feeling. Guys get this wrong terribly. I'm not saying girls don't, but guys, be careful on this one. His parents try and tell him it's wrong to do this. They say, you're not supposed to marry a Philistine. Why don't you find a nice young gal from the Israelites? And he insists. He says, no, I want her. Okay, so they don't put up much of a fight here, and we'll come back to this in just a second. But he says, she is right in my eyes. Samson knows what he wants, or at least he thinks he knows what he wants visually. And maybe you're that way too. Maybe you have some ideas of what you think you want. This is not a desire to find something wholesome, to find something helpful, to find something lasting. This is lust. This is a desire for physical relationship. This is a desire that's not about loving someone else. This is a desire to get something that he wants. He thinks he knows what he wants. It's his lust. It's deciding for him. It's making his own decisions for him. This is important for us. Now, this might be sexual for you, and it might just be non-sexual, but it's the same idea. There are things that seem right to us that doesn't make them right. Just because we feel like we want something, just because we feel like we need to have something, that doesn't mean that it's right. There's this value we have in our culture where there's this inward sense of self, only I know the real me. I know who I am. I know what I want. Nobody else understands me. Disney has done this to us. That's the main plot line to most Disney movies. The main character is a misunderstood youth. Everybody else around them doesn't quite understand them. In the end, they're going to show them that I'm right and you're wrong, even though the parents usually tell the main character, no, no. This inward sense of self that tells us, this is what I want, this is who I am, I need to go get it. It would, in fact, be wrong for me not to have what's inside of me. So right now, the only real, shared sin in our culture, the only like agreed upon sin in our culture is to tell somebody that what they want and feel inside is wrong. Okay, that's pretty much the only thing you can do to somebody that everybody would agree on. Oh, that's wrong. What if that desire is wrong? What if what's inside of you is what's wrong? That's the case that the Bible makes. If we intend to follow God, we need to care more about what he thinks than what we feel inwardly. This has all sorts of repercussions. This is common for everybody. You don't have to be a young person. You don't have to be somebody who's single and wanting to get married. This is everybody in this room. There's something inside of you that you want, and if it's not today, it'll be eventually, later today. Later this week or whenever, there's something that you're just going to want, and you got to decide, is that a godly desire? Is that something that honors God? Is that something that matches up with his plan for my life? Okay, Samson here, he wants to marry a Philistine. And the question that his parents kind of pose back to him is it okay to marry a non-believer? If you're a believer, is it okay to marry a non-believer? Okay, remember, Samson is Israelite. This girl is Philistine. The Bible answer to this question is no. Okay, God says it's wrong to seek a relationship and get married with a non-believer. If you're a believer, you shouldn't seek to get into a relationship if you're a believer with a non-believer. The Old Testament command, God tells his people, don't intermarry with the people around you. That's what Samson's violating right here. Don't intermarry with the nations around you. So he's just flat out, I don't know, she's hot. I really want this. I've got a good reason. She's hot. The New Testament commands a little bit different, but it's the same idea. Don't be unequally yoked with an unbeliever. Okay, Old Testament, New Testament says the same thing. If you're a believer, if you're going to follow God, don't join yourself to somebody who's not following God. And it's a command in both testaments. So you can't really get away from it. Both of these fall under the category of marrying the right person. if you want to say it negatively, you could say the category of not marrying the wrong person. That's a double negative, so I don't know what category that falls into. Don't marry the wrong person. And there's some easy ones. There's some freebies that we have. If you want to know not to marry the wrong person, well, how do I accomplish that? How do I not marry the wrong person? This is basically at the top of the list. Are you a believer? Are they not a believer? And you can take their name off the board. The Bible says in other places, how can two walk together unless they be agreed? Well, that's a scenario where there's a believer and a believer that maybe they don't have agreements about life, trajectory, ministry, dreams and goals, all the rest. Are you just going to let physical attraction determine that you're going to get together and commit to spend the rest of your life with each other when you don't even agree about basics of life? That's a bad idea. Also in the category of don't marry the wrong person. Why do we ignore this from God? Why do we ignore God's way? A couple of thoughts for you. For one, we don't want to end up alone. Oftentimes, we just hope it's going to work out. We want the unbelieving person to start to believe in God, so we think if we hang in there long enough with them that maybe eventually they'll get there. That's a common one, by the way. Back to where Samson's at. Inwardly, I think we just know something deep inside of us. We just feel like this is right. It just feels right. And that's your flesh, by the way. Sometimes you think, oh, my flesh is just going to have all these like evil thoughts, anger. I'll know when it's my flesh because it's just it's gross and bad and wrong. Sometimes, most of the time probably, your flesh actually feels good. That feeling you get that feels right, that's your own flesh just trying to get you to go after it. There's an important principle we need to live by. It's pretty easy. It's pretty basic. Christianity 101. You don't always get to have everything that you want. I don't even know if this is 101 for Christianity alone. I remember watching a Saturday Night Live skit. This is probably inspired by the Lord. But back when I started coming around to church, I was in the Kindred Singles ministry, and I remember on a Monday night, clear as day, we're sitting in that room, we get to the end of the Bible study, and Pastor Jason plays a Saturday Night Live skit. And the premise of the skit is they're trying to help people get out of debt or prevent people from having debt. And the title of this revolutionary new system for staying out of debt is Don't Spend Money That You Don't Have. And they were just over the top, just playing up this idea. Wow, this is amazing. I'd never thought of this before. To not spend money that you don't already have. It's the same idea. Jesus actually agrees with that idea. Jesus said if you're going to follow him, you have to deny yourself. Don't spend the money that you don't have. Don't spend yourself on things that you shouldn't have. This is Matthew 16, verses 24 through 26. Then Jesus told his disciples, if anyone would come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. For whoever would save his life will lose it. Whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. For what will it profit a man if he gains the whole world and forfeits his soul? Or what should a man give in return for his soul? We're talking about following God, denying yourself in the context of having a romantic relationship. But God wants more than just your romantic relationships. This is one that messes a lot of people up. This is one that sets a lot of people off course with God. In fact, this would be in the top one, list of one, maybe, of what causes people to stray from God. And it's a natural desire. God says it's not good for man to be alone. Okay, we read Samson did some questionable things in this chapter. He kills a lion, which kind of doesn't make sense, but then he goes back and scoops honey out of its belly. This is gross, okay? I mean, this is what guys do. This is single. This is why guys need a wife. Most guys. Like, I had a real hard time stopping scooping honey out of dead animals until I met my wife, okay? it's a natural, it's a normal desire. I tend to think most people will get married if you want to get married, but you can't rush it. You can't force it. You can't get out ahead of God and try and make your plan happen, because what ends up happening then is you'll compromise the things God wants for you. You'll compromise on all the rest of your life. You'll give it all up just to have a relationship. And that's what Samson's doing. He's just doing it for sex. He's not even doing it for any form of intimacy. But God wants more than your romantic relationships. He wants more than your sexuality. He wants all of you. He wants all of your life. He wants the whole thing. Samson doesn't seem to care. His parents, they seem to care, but they're not willing to make sure that he does what's right. And that's bad. They're not helping him. We don't know how old he is. In my mind, I guess I'm thinking 20. I don't know what you guys are thinking. You know, 18, 20, 27. He still lives with his parents, so back then, probably 18 to 20. If it were today, 30, 34, 30, you know, then times have changed. We don't know how old he is, but his parents aren't helping him here. Okay, they don't care enough to make sure that he obeys. They end up going along with him to get this girl. It's not that they pull back and say, that's a bad idea. They still go along with it. They still drive him in their Toyota Corolla down to Timnah, and they get the girl for him. So there's still a party to this. Now, look back at verse 4 for just a second. We're going to focus in on one thing, because this is the big picture of what's going on here. Verse 4 says, his mother and father did not know that this was from the Lord, for he, the Lord, was seeking an opportunity against the Philistines. At that time, the Philistines ruled over Israel. The question is, does this from the Lord, this occasion, this desire maybe, does this mean that God put this into Samson? Does this mean that God led Samson to do these things? Or even does this mean that God is okay that Samson wanted to violate God's law just so that God could have this other thing that he wanted? The answer to that, again, is no. That's where we started today. This doesn't mean that God endorsed what Samson did. This idea of it being from the Lord, here's what this means. God is looking for an opportunity against the Philistines. Samson's lust, disobedience, and bad temper are all going to get incorporated into God's plan to work against the Philistines. Basically, God is going to use Samson as an irritant to create a conflict between the Israelites and the Philistines. Okay, let's say that again. God is going to use Samson's lust, his disobedience, and his bad temper to stir up a confrontation between the Philistines and the Israelites. We're going to say a lot about Samson today. None of this is to say that God was with him in heart in what he chose to do. God used him, but using him is an awful lot different than agreeing with him, supporting him. Okay, God's going to use him sort of despite him. God is not supportive of sin. God is always, always against sin. God hates sin. Okay? But God can use both good and bad things to accomplish his purposes. It doesn't mean that we have to be perfectly obedient in everything we do for God to use us. If we disobey, God can still use us. We just might miss out on the blessing. We might end up in some consequence or some correction. But God can use both good and bad. You see, Samson had an idea of what life was supposed to be about, what his life was supposed to be about. But God also had an idea of what Samson's life was going to do, and that was to save Israel from the Philistines. So God's working that angle. Why does God want confrontation? Let's talk about that for a second. The Philistines ruled over Israel. They didn't just live across the border in Philistia. They lived inside Israel. The city Timnah is in the tribe of Dan's area, so it's inside of Israel. They're just generally mixed within the country of Israel. And the Israelites, even though they don't like it, they're doing nothing to try and get free from the Philistines ruling over them. Okay, previously, the book of Judges, we see this pattern repeat. The Israelites are enslaved to a group of people. They cry out to God. God sends them a hero, or a rescuer, a judge, who then leads them in battle and leads them to break free from their captor. They're not doing that here. They're assimilating with the Philistines. They're intermarrying. They're doing all these things to just sort of join up with the Philistines. So why does God want conflict? He wants to pry them apart. Hey, Sasha and I got a fish tank this summer. It's awesome, by the way. It's not dorky, it's awesome. Occasionally we have some snails that get a little too friendly with each other, and you just need to do things to pry them apart. I didn't realize that this was going to be inappropriate. they don't want to separate, but their master from up above needs to reach into the tank and do something to pry them apart. So sometimes we send our aggressive goldfish in there, and she just swims in and pecks at them a little bit. All right, let me get back on track here. Why does God want conflict? God's trying to pry them apart. Not because they want to, because he wants to. And God will do this in our lives. It might be that we're okay with our sin. We've developed a life for ourselves, circumstances that we're comfortable with. We don't want to change. And yet that's not at all what God has in mind for us. Question is God just going to let us go our own way forever and ever without ever trying to get in there and do some separating? Here he's trying to get in there and do some separating. Is God that hands off where he just lets us do exactly what we want and never prods and pokes and tries to reach into our lives? He absolutely does. He'll do exactly this thing to us. He wants our cooperation. It goes way better for us when we cooperate with God. But if we insist on going our own way, if we ignore God for years and years, there's a pretty good chance God's doing things, sending irritants into our life to try and get us to separate from what has us enslaved. And God will do this to us, not because we want it, but because he wants it. The rest of the verses that we read, we'll pick back up in verse 10 here, but the rest of the verses we read, they go to the vineyard. This is where the lion attack comes. It's an amazing story. I don't know why God puts his spirit on Samson to kill a lion. I've got some ideas, but it's sort of this first time where God's spirit rushes upon Samson. He does this great act of strength. Okay, he gives his parents some honey. All these things that he does, he touches a dead animal. He lies to his parents. I mean, these are all violations of the vow that he's made, that he's supposed to be living by. Really, it's just clear that Samson is driven by his physical appetites, his lusts, his desires. And maybe you can relate to that. Maybe you can relate. It's not God's spirit that guides you. It's not a knowledge of God. It's not a heart that desires God. It's just whatever you're craving in the moment. Maybe you're driven by your appetites and desires. Maybe you can relate to that. Certainly, that's not a way to please God with the way we live, to just let every single appetite guide our decisions. Okay, in Philippians chapter 3, the Apostle Paul comments on this. He says, there's many who walk as enemies of Christ. Their God is their bellies. He goes on to say, but we are citizens of heaven. Basically, there's a different way. There's a better way. But if you're walking by your appetites, your God is your belly, whatever you desire and crave, you're not pleasing God. You're walking in your flesh, not in your spirit, not by God's spirit. That's certainly where Samson is here. Let's jump to verse 10 and continue on. His father and mother went to the woman, and Samson prepared a feast there, so the young men used to do. As soon as the people saw him, they brought 30 companions to be with them. And Samson said to them, now let me put a riddle to you. If you can tell me what it is within the 7 days of the feast and find out, then I will give to you 30 linen garments and 30 changes of clothing. But if you cannot tell me what it is, then you shall give me 30 linen garments and 30 changes of clothes. And they said to him, put your riddle that we may hear it. And he said to them, out of the eater came something to eat, out of the strong came something sweet. And in 3 days, they could not solve the riddle. On the fourth day, they said to Samson's wife, "Entice your husband to tell us the riddle, lest we burn you and your father's house with fire. Have you invited us here to impoverish us?" And Samson's wife wept over him and said, "You only hate me, you do not love me. You have put a riddle to my people, and you have not told me what it is." And he said to her, "Behold, I have not told my father nor my mother, and shall I tell you?" She wept before him, and 7 days that their feast lasted, and on the seventh day he told her, because she pressed him hard. Then she told the riddle to her people, and the men of the city came to him on the seventh day before the sun went down. "What is sweeter than honey? What is stronger than a lion?" And he said to them, "If you had not plowed with my heifer, you would not have found my riddle." And the Spirit of the Lord rushed upon him, and he went down to Ashkelon, struck down 30 men of the town, and took their spoil, gave the garments to those who told the riddle. In hot anger, he went back to his father's house. Samson's wife was given to his companion, who had been his best man. Okay, so this is a wedding feast. This is his wedding. It lasted 7 days. Okay, Samson is there to be married. You know, he just went to a vineyard to pick up his new bride-to-be. Definitely violated. You're not sure if he ate the grapes. We're not sure if he drank the grape juice or the wine. We're not sure to the level of disobedience there. Here he's at a wedding feast for 7 days. It's pretty clear. I mean, there's drunkenness, there's partying, there's different things that are happening. Okay, so if it was vague previously, mind you, Samson just has this habit of putting himself near sin. He just keeps putting himself in situations where there's the opportunity to stumble. And that's common for a lot of us too. We have a problem with drinking, and we're just going to hang out in places where alcohol is available. We have a problem with drugs, we're going to hang out in places where drugs are available. We have a problem with sex, we're going to be on websites where the idea of pornography is available. We put ourselves close enough to sin. Now, sometimes it's not that we have the intent to sin, but the fact that we put ourselves in that place is just a foolish choice. Maybe we think we're stronger or strong enough, we can overcome it. Samson doesn't seem to be able to do any of that. Okay. Did you notice that he doesn't have any friends of his own? Okay, so he goes to his own wedding. It's him and his parents. And immediately what they do is they find 30 guys to be his wedding party. It says it was the custom back then, so maybe that plays into this. The way I read that, this is my interpretation. Okay, take it for what it's worth, is he didn't have any friends. No, nobody likes the guy. Nobody wanted to be at his wedding. They had to find friends for him to fill in the pews at his wedding. That's a sad place to be. It makes you wonder, is it sort of a chicken or egg situation? Does he not have friends because he's such a selfish, arrogant, self-centered guy? Is that why nobody likes him? Is that why he doesn't have any friends? Or is he selfish and arrogant and self-centered because he has no friends? Nobody there to kind of help keep him in check? Nobody there to keep him accountable? Nobody there to bounce ideas off of? Because that happens too. Okay, if left to your own devices, if kind of kept inside the chamber of your own thoughts, it's real easy to start to believe everything that you think. It's real easy to start drinking your own bathwater, so to speak. You guys know that one? You bathe in the tub, and then you're thirsty. It's real easy to start doing that. You buy into your own ideas. Then when you do have interactions with other people, you're just always at odds with them. What they say doesn't agree with what you already thought. You're abrasive. You fight with everybody you know. You can't quite have a building relationship where you're starting to develop some trust, some fellowship, some friendship in a helpful manner. Maybe you join a church. Maybe you start to get to know some of the people there. Maybe you start having lunch with them in the Blind Munchies Coffee House after the church service is over. Okay, maybe you start doing these things. Is it leading toward relationships where you have a friendship where you're actually depending upon real life things with these people? Or is it just a church show? Is it just a stopover in your week? You feel better because you kind of sat near some Christians for lunch on a Sunday? What about Tuesday? What about Friday? What about Saturday morning? Are you building friendship in such a way where it helps you walk with the Lord? Samson had nobody in his life like that. His parents tried weekly, not like time-wise, but like it was a timid effort on their part. Do you have any friends? Is that a weird question to ask on a Sunday morning? Do you have people you depend on? Real relationships? Okay, Samson gives this riddle. This is just an unfair riddle, isn't it? Like, it has to do with the lion and honey that he scooped in his own experience out of the lion's belly. How are these guys ever gonna guess this riddle? There's no chance. This reminds me of The Hobbit, when Bilbo's in the cave with Gollum. And they're doing these riddles, and I'm terrible at riddles. I wouldn't have gotten the real riddles that they got. But at one point, Bilbo reaches into his pocket, and he's thinking of a riddle, but he just says out loud, "What's in my pocket?" And Gollum jumps at that, and he's like, "That's not fair. You can't ask that. That's not a fair riddle." Bilbo realizes there's no chance he's going to guess what's in his pocket, and so he holds to it. Well, that's what frees him from the cave, basically. That's Samson's riddle here. There's no chance they have, unless he tells them. There's no chance. They put some pressure on Samson's wife. Okay, they say, "We're going to kill you and your father. We're going to burn down his house if you don't tell us." She gets Samson to give the answer. One thing that stood out to me in this, Samson and her, they have no relationship. They don't know each other. They're going to get married, or at least that's what it seems like. He says to her in the middle of her asking him, he says, "I haven't even told my parents. Why would I tell you?" That is not a good start to a marriage. Okay, that's too many people in the marriage. The idea of marriage the Bible gives is you leave your father and mother and you're joined to a wife. Leave and cleave. Or Sasha says cleave and leave, but it is leave and cleave. You're starting a new family. Okay, and there's other indications here. Samson goes back to his parents' house after this wedding fiasco. Okay, he hasn't detached from his parents sufficiently. He's not ready to get married. He's too dependent on them. He's got too much invested into the relationship with them. Now, you should love your parents, but your relationship does change when you get married. As you get older, it changes. As you grow up, as you move out of the house, as you move forward in life, certainly after you get married, your relationship with your parents needs to change. All of this just makes Samson angry. They find out the answer to the riddle. He's just a competitive guy, but he's angry because he lost, and that sets him off. Okay, it says, then he goes and kills 30 people. Like, what have you done to pay your bookie back when you lost the bet? Have you ever killed somebody? He goes and kills 30. I mean, this is just, the guy's got a hair trigger of a temper. And so he goes and kills these people. And again, where it gets confusing is it says, the Spirit of the Lord rushed upon him, and then he did these things. What is the Spirit of the Lord doing for him? Certainly, you couldn't say the Spirit of the Lord is touching his heart. This is physical strength. This is physical stamina. This is some type of physical prowess. You know, Superman could fly. Batman, no, never mind. Spider-Man can climb buildings and shoot webs. Whatever the Spirit of the Lord was doing for Samson, this was enabling him to do these incredible feats of strength. It was his own anger. It was his own revenge that he's seeking. But it starts this blood feud between Samson and the Philistines. It just ratchets from here, okay? God is stirring up a conflict between the two, and he's just using Samson's bad choices and bad temper to make it happen. Okay, let's get into chapter 15. And I'll just read the whole thing real quick here. It says, after some days at the time of the wheat harvest, Samson went to visit his wife with a young goat, and he said, I will go into my wife in the chamber, but her father would not allow him to go in. And her father said, I really thought that you had utterly hated her. So I gave her to your companion. Is not her sister more beautiful than she? So please take her instead. And Samson said, this time I shall be innocent in regard to the Philistines when I do them harm. So Samson went and caught 300 foxes and took torches. And he turned them tail to tail and put a torch between each pair of tails. And when he had set fire to the torches, he let the foxes go into the standing grain of the Philistines and set fire to the stacked grain and to the standing grain, as well as to the olive orchards. Then the Philistines said, who has done this? And they said, Samson, the son-in-law of the Timnite, because he has taken his wife and given her to his companion. And the Philistines came up and burned her and her father with fire. And Samson said to them, if this is what you do, I swear I will be avenged on you, and after that I will quit. And so he struck them hip and thigh with a great blow, and he went down and stayed in the cleft of the rock of Edom. Then the Philistines came up and encamped in Judah and made a raid on Lehi. And the men of Judah said, why have you come up against us? They said, we have come up to bind Samson, to do him as he did to us. Then 3,000 men of Judah went down to the cleft of the rock of Edom and said to Samson, do you not know the Philistines are rulers over us? What then is this that you have done to us? And he said to them, as they did to me, so I have done to them. And they said to him, we have come down to bind you, that we may give you into the hand of the Philistines. And Samson said to them, swear to me that you will not attack me yourselves. They said to him, no, we will only bind you and give you into their hands. We will surely not kill you. So they bound him with two new ropes and brought him up from the rock. When they came to Lehi, the Philistines came shouting to meet him. Then the Spirit of the Lord rushed upon him, and the ropes that were on his arms became as flax that had caught fire, and his bonds melted off his hands. And he found a fresh jawbone of a donkey and put out his hand and took it, and with it he struck 1,000 men. And Samson said, with the jawbone of a donkey, heaps upon heaps, with the jawbone of a donkey, I have struck down 1,000 men. As soon as he had finished speaking, he threw away the jawbone out of his hands, and that place was called Ramoth Lehi. And he was very thirsty, and he called upon the Lord and said, you have granted this great salvation by the hand of your servant, and shall I now die of thirst and fall into the hands of the uncircumcised? And God split open the hollow place that is at Lehi, and water came out from it. And when he drank, his spirit returned, and he revived. Therefore, the name of it was called En HaKoreh. It is at Lehi to this day. And he judged Israel in the days of the Philistines for 20 years. Okay, so some time has passed. Now, apparently, because they were at the wedding, Samson is technically married, but he leaves his own wedding in a fury. I think this is where the idea of runaway bride, the movie, came from. They just flipped the script. It was Samson originally. Nobody? He leaves his own wedding in anger, and he goes to try to make things right, at least in his own eyes. Some time has passed now. This chapter that we just read, Samson wants to go find his wife. Again, the lust returns to him. He's not interested in a relationship with her. He just wants to sleep with her. Okay, his bride's father won't let him. He's given his daughter to another guy. Okay, so the best man at the wedding got to marry his daughter. As a consolation prize, he tries to give his other daughter to Samson, tries to, I guess, probably like appease his anger. But Samson's mad, and instead of accepting the offer, which I don't know if I would have either, but instead of that, he's now going to get even more revenge. We find out the one thing that trumps Samson's lust is his anger. Probably the one thing that trumps anything else that he's thinking or feeling. Anything else that he's intending to do It's this idea of, I'm angry, I need to kill somebody. I'm angry, I need to make this right. I'm angry, I need to change things so that things can be made right, at least according to me. There's only one thing that outdoes his lust, and that's his anger. That's a common experience for a lot of people. Anger will take you places you didn't think you could go. Anger will outdo whatever else you intended to do that day. This could be a version, a form of bitterness. You just can't stop stewing on something that happened, some way that people treated you, something people said to you. And then you just can't function. You can't focus. That's the one thing burning inside of you. That's anger. Okay, so Samson goes to get revenge. There's this crazy story. How long do you think it took him to round up 300 foxes? So last night I was reviewing my notes and I thought, I'm going to have Dane go out into the woods and see if he can't test out this. Just find two foxes. I'll multiply that times 150. We'll figure out how long this was supposed to take. We'll get back to you on that one. Yeah. Okay. Just imagine how angry do you have to be to go on and on and on and on and on. At what point do you give up? You're like, I'm at 147 foxes. This is not gonna, I just don't see this happening. Let me just forget it. But what a crazy story. What a crazy plan. Okay, these foxes, he ties torches to them. They drag the torches through the fields. It lights all the grain on fire, destroys the crops of the Philistines. He's trying to hurt them, not just physically. He's trying to hurt them economically. He's trying to ruin them. He's trying to create this huge lasting impact. The Philistines find out. So they send an army now for Samson. A couple thousand guys. The army marches into town. And Samson has gone to hide out, but this army encounters the men of Judah, it says. So these are Israelites. And they're like, we need Samson. And this is how little the people of Judah wanted to fight. This tells you the whole story. Did they want to get free from the Philistines? Maybe it was fear. Maybe they were just okay with how things were. But they just sort of say, we'll go get Samson and turn him over to you. We don't want to fight. We're sorry. They were okay with being ruled over by these Philistines. God didn't want it that way for them, but they were okay with it. Okay, they go and find Samson now, the Israelites. They go and find Samson. They basically just talk it through with him. Like, here's the plan. We'll tie you up. We'll hand you over. And Samson's like, well, as long as you don't kill me, that's fine. So maybe Samson knew something they didn't. Maybe Samson had some further revenge idea in mind. They tie him up. They take him and turn him over to the Philistines, and it says the Spirit of the Lord rushed upon him. Okay, the chains on his wrist just melt away. And then he says he killed 1,000 people. This is Marvel Comics level stuff. Just too much to even be believed. It's like, it stopped being indulgent 15 minutes ago. Can we get on with the plot line in the movie? Like, we don't need to keep seeing more and more. But he kills all these guys. So the revenge keeps ratcheting up. Now, notice Samson did get arrested willingly. There's parts of Samson's life, we'll just touch on this briefly and then wrap this whole thing up. There's parts of Samson's life that do sort of tease out what's going to happen to Jesus in the New Testament. Okay, Jesus allowed himself to get arrested willingly. He didn't fight back. Some of the people with Jesus at the time, they thought, now's the time to fight. So Peter pulls out a sword, cuts a guy's ear off. And Jesus just says, don't you think I could fight back if I wanted to? Don't you think my Father could send a bunch of angels and fight back? Jesus willingly let himself get tied up. He willingly went to the cross. He willingly did that because there was a bigger plan in mind. He prayed, Lord, if there's anything you can do to let this cup pass from me, please do, but not my will, but your will be done. Jesus understood that God had a bigger plan than what was happening right then and there. Samson didn't do that. There's parts of his life that draw our attention to parallels that happen in Jesus' life. He almost preempt it. Samson doesn't do that, though. He does let himself get arrested willingly, But basically, he sets himself up as like a Trojan horse. He gets into the Philistines' territory, and then he's like, surprise. And he just starts hacking away at people. It says he used the jawbone of a donkey. It's like, that's just brutal. Is that sharp? I don't think so. Like, it's like, ouch. We get through the end of this scene, and Samson prays to God. This is the first time in his whole life that we see, anyway. He prays to God, and his prayer is not all that impressive. Sort of a prayer of entitlements. When Jesus taught his disciples how to pray, he didn't teach them to pray as entitled servants. Samson says, I'm thirsty, and you're going to let me die right now? After all that I've done to you? He goes to God with this sort of entitlement. God, you owe me. God's gracious. He responds by giving Samson water. Only thing I can figure on this is there was still work left for Samson to do, and so God provided for him so that he could end up finishing it out and doing it. But what's this whole story about? Okay, Samson's this hot-headed, selfish, impulsive guy, and God uses him. The Spirit of the Lord rushes on him. We read three times today. To kill a lion, which kind of doesn't make much sense. To kill 30 guys. Then to kill 1,000 guys. This isn't the last time. What's this story about? Let me give you a couple thoughts and we'll close up. Number one, God's purpose. God is always at work. There's always things God's doing in this world. There's always things that he's doing in our lives. Not just broadly, worldwide, in us. There's people he wants us to be. There's things he wants us to do. And there's people he wants us to reach. And so God's always at work in our lives. He's always doing stuff. Okay, he uses people, you and me. He uses people to carry out his plan. And he doesn't have to do it that way, but that's his chosen way to do it. He puts his spirit in people, he puts his spirit on people, and he uses us for ministry, to serve and meet needs of other people, to minister spiritually to other people. In this particular story, what was God's purpose? Okay, God has an outcome in mind. This is a completely unlikely plan, but he's going to use the ungodliness of Samson to annoy the Philistines. That's God's plan. It's crazy, right? Kind of like walking around a city 7 times and the walls fall down. That's pretty crazy, right? God's going to use the ungodliness of Samson to annoy the Philistines into picking a fight with him, and then his people will actually break free from their enslavement. So God creates this conflict between his people and the world through the actions of one of his selfish, sinful people. Now, don't raise your hand and say, God's got a ministry for me. He wants me to be a jerk. He wants me to go around being an irritating man. He wants me to make sure all the unbelievers hate me so that then they'll turn to God and glorify him. It's like, no, God wants us to love each other so they can other people can see how good he is. So we don't have this as an option. This is not a career path. Okay. Let me read this to you. In all this, God is at work. Why can Samson kill the lion? The Spirit of the Lord came upon him in power. Why is he able to strike down 30 Philistines and steal their clothes? The Spirit of the Lord came upon him in power. God is giving Samson superhuman strength and the one thing that he needs, other than his own character flaws, for him to cause division between Israel and the Philistines, which God's people, though they don't realize, desperately need. God is starting to save his people by divorcing them from their marriage to their idols and to the world around them. God is setting his people free. We can tend to give Samson too much credit. I mean, they make movies about this guy. I went on YouTube last night and tried to look up some movie possibilities. All I found was one AI created one that was about Legos and Samson. And it's actually kind of cool if you want to check it out. We tend to give Samson too much credit. God used him. That's the bottom line. At the end of his life, which we'll cover next week, you can decide, is Samson going to be with us in heaven or is he not? God used him, but we can't look at his life and say that's a prescription for being used by God. We actually have to look at it as the opposite. That's a prescription for being used in spite of you. Okay. We're instructed in so many ways not to be like Samson. So we can't look at his life and say, yep, that's the path for a Christian. It's not. It really isn't. This story is about God. And the story is about what God can do. How great is God that he can orchestrate the decisions of 8 billion people on earth to achieve his desired purpose? And he's not even controlling their decisions. Okay, all of life in this world is like improv. It's not like we're actors following a script. It's like we're actors doing improv where we're bouncing ideas off of each other. And God is coordinating all that as the director, making the movie that he wants to make. That's the story of Samson. Okay, God doesn't only use us when we're good. God doesn't only use us when we obey. If that were the case, then God would be weak, and he would be totally limited by you and I, by our willingness and our ability to obey. That's not how God works. God will reach into our life. He'll use us whether we know it or not, and that's Samson. And he'll guide us even if we don't want it, and he'll correct us and pull us back even when we don't want it. Okay. But it's God's story. He's the one at work. He's the one that determines the end. Our decision is whether or not we want to participate with him or not. That's what we get to decide. Okay. We'll end it there for today. Next week, Judges chapter 16, the exciting conclusion. Why don't we pray? That'll be that. Why don't you all stand?